אתם עם SBS בעברית. לעוד סיפורים מעניינים, כנסו ל-sbs.com.au.
Bob Carr, former Labour Premier of New South Wales, who served as Australia's Foreign Minister in Julia Gillard's government from March 12 to September 13, has just released a book, Diary of a Foreign Minister, detailing his time in the job. Mr. Carr, welcome to Shalom Australia on SBS Radio. It is a great honour and pleasure to have you here today.
It's a great honour for me to be on Shalom Australia. Thank you very much for the opportunity.
Mr. Carr, as a veteran journalist, I've been following your astonishing career and was delighted to get an insight into the decision-making process from your diary and a glimpse into the life of the foreign minister beyond all those press conferences and releases. And Mr. Carr, you actually humanized your job by detailing how you don't particularly like the food on flights, worry about your diet, health, and think very carefully what tie to wear, and so on. You clearly enjoyed your job and your position on the world stage, and it is amazing for us to know now what was going on behind the scenes. What I like about it is that so soon after you finished the job, 6 months later, we can read about it. We don't have to wait another 50 years. The flip side is that there is a possibility that too much has been exposed. Foreign Minister Julie Bishop already expressed her concern that your book could hurt Australia's foreign relations. Are you concerned about it?
Naturally, I would be if there's any chance of that. But I've spoken to several of our ambassadors, and I took a lot of care. There are no state secrets revealed in this. But on the other hand, I think, and you're generous enough to highlight this, I think it does give people, for the first time, an account of how a foreign minister does operate. And I'm honoured by the fact that you said that, because that was my goal.
Thank you. Turning to the Racial Discrimination Act, Jewish leaders are fuming over the government's proposed changes. In the past, the Executive Council of Australian Jewry, the ECAJ, used the act to litigate against Holocaust deniers, extremists and anti-Semites. Under the proposed changes, it would no longer be illegal to offend, insult or humiliate an Australian because of his race or ethnicity. And Robert Good, the head of the Executive Council of Australian Jewry, says that if the legislation is amended as envisaged by the federal government, it will unleash hate speech in Australia. What is your view, Mr. Carr?
I disagree with what the federal government is proposing. I agree with the Jewish leaders who are asking for this to be abandoned. I would propose that the federal government take this off the table, don't proceed with it, allow more discussion.
Mr. Carr, during your 18 months as a foreign minister, there was so much trouble around the world. The Arab Spring turned into a cold and deadly winter, especially in Syria, where thousands of civilians are being killed, with Iran defying the West and continuing with its nuclear program, casualties in Afghanistan, appalling human rights in many countries around the globe, and the list goes on. Taking it all into account, I was a bit puzzled, and I'm really happy I have the opportunity to ask you directly, that so much attention has been placed on the Israeli-Palestinian issue. You even confess in your book, it's page 187, the issue dominates my life. Would you please share with our listeners your thoughts on this matter and why it is so important to you?
It was important for a period. I'm the first to agree that the humanitarian catastrophe in Syria dwarfs any of the injustices being done to Palestinians in the West Bank. There's no argument about that. You make an absolutely valid point that the humanitarian implications and the civil rights abuses in these other countries are more serious than things happening on the West Bank. But there was a period leading up to a vote in the General Assembly about the status of the Palestinian delegation when there was a lot of lobbying and there were a lot of arguments in the government, but I would think only for a couple of weeks, a dominating issue.
And you said the issue dominates my life.
Yes.
And I was reading about it. Yeah. Why?
But only for that short period. It was a symbolic vote to lift the non-state status of the Palestinian delegation. They weren't going to be regarded as a state. My view was that we should use our vote on this to send a message. To send a message to both Palestinians and Israelis. To the settlers that they couldn't count on Australia to vote no, to send a message to the Palestinian leadership that there was no substitute for direct talks with the Israelis.
But Mr. Carr, in retrospect, did Australia's position really achieve anything?
What would we have achieved by voting no?
The settlement is all part of the final negotiations between the parties. There is no point for us debating the peace process, as peace can only be achieved by direct negotiations between the Israelis and Palestinians.
Nitzi, you took the words right out of my mouth. I couldn't count the number of times when I said, don't talk to me about the specifics of refugee status, right of return, these other questions. They're up to the parties to determine in direct negotiations. So it's without a doubt the settlement activity complicates the peace process.
I'll take you back to Australia, Mr. Carr. You talk about the Israel lobby in Australia, and you identify AJAC figures such as Mark Liebler and Colin Rubinstein as allegedly exerting improper influence on the government. Those comments have resulted in a flood of anti-Semitic reaction. Do you feel responsible for it?
No, of course not. I think it's very important not to debase the adjective anti-Semitic. If this is thrown around when someone who's a proven long-term friend of Israel, admirer of Israel, makes criticisms of settlement policy, then you won't have the force when you actually identify real anti-Semitism. What are the differences between Bob Carr and AJAC? One, I support the right of Israel to exist. Two, whenever I've spoken to Palestinian delegations, I've said to them, I condemn rocket attacks from Gaza. They must negotiate with Israel direct. I've even done this, Nitza. I've told Palestinians that if there were bombs going off in Sydney, I would have built a protective barrier faster than the Israeli cabinet did. If you've got someone who's on record saying all these things, but insists that the settlement mission is complicating the peace process, then one really should be careful about saying you're an enemy of Israel.
I'm talking about the Israel lobby.
Yeah, I had people in the pro-Israel lobby telling me that I had to be constrained from making routine criticisms of settlement activity.
I'm not talking about Australia's foreign policy. I'm talking about your comments about the Israel lobby in Melbourne and the Falafel faction, the Jewish MPs in the parliament. Mr. Carr, you are an historian with extremely sound knowledge of Jewish history and anti-Semitism. You publicly said that the book written by Holocaust Auschwitz survivor Primo Levi was one of the most important books of the 20th century. And you understand
that... I said the most important. Actually, in my book, My Reading Life, I said it's the most important.
Yes, and you understand better than most people that persecution and suffering are the direct result of racial hatred. And I know that you're not anti-Semitic. I've been following you for years. Zeddy Lawrence, the editor of the Australian Jewish News, writes in his editorial on April 18 that the problem with your portrayal of the pro-Israel lobby as wielding power, buying the ears of the Prime Minister, is that it feeds into a narrative on Jews that has been the staple of anti-Semites since the beginning of time. And I'm sure that you are aware of the protocols of the Elders of Zion, the anti-Semitic hoax that described Jewish conspiracy for global domination, with Jews controlling the press, world's government and economy. Do you acknowledge that there may be serious ramifications from your comments about the Israel lobby?
Nitza, I would simply say the way to resolve this is to read my book. I was proposing that the government criticise settlement activity. I was then told that my draft statement had to go past certain people in the government and had to go past the community. Now, I regarded that as objectionable. I was stopped from making the criticism.
You don't criticize any other lobby groups. You single out the Israel lobby group. What's the difference?
Well, again, you've got to read the book.
I did.
There was no other lobby group, just as a matter of fact, there's no other lobby
group.
Are
you talking about the Palestinian lobby group?
But I give you an account. One meeting I had with the Palestinian lobby in which I told them that we would continue to condemn rocket attacks from Gaza on Israel. Israel was entitled to protect itself and could not be bombed to the negotiating table. If AJAC takes objection to these statements, they are telling the Australian government that it cannot take a position for a two-state solution.
But you see, I'm going back to the Israel lobby that generated a lot of anti-Semitic reaction. You're talking about other lobby groups in your book. In page 271, you said, I met a delegation from the Council of Churches recently returned from Israel-Palestine to press the Palestinian case with me. I told them to put their case to every Australian politician they could reach.
Yes, but they were supporting a two-state solution.
Israel also supporting. That's the official position of the Israeli government. And AJAC, they support.
But the mistake you're making is to suggest that I'm saying the Israel lobby in Melbourne, which has got rather extreme Likud views, Likud-aligned views.
And you call them the Likudniks.
Yeah, they are Likudniks. They have appropriated for themselves the job of speaking for pro-Israeli Australians. But their views are uncompromising, especially on settlement policy. And I simply disagree with that. I'm not disagreeing with their right to make representations. I'm disagreeing with them saying it's illegitimate for an Australian foreign minister to criticise settlement policy.
But you see,
or to abstain in a vote in the General Assembly on enhanced Palestinian status.
But do you acknowledge that maybe serious ramifications from your comments about the Israel lobby? That's what I'm concerned about.
No, it can't be. Because
well, we already got a flood of anti-Semitic remarks on Mike Denby's website.
What about the pro-Semitic remarks in the book?
I'm not talking about your position. I respect
she says,
your position.
She says she knows.
That's not my question. My question is
singling out
the Israel lobby, you don't single any other lobby group. There are so many lobby groups in Australia. You even tell the Palestinian lobby group, you said to them, go and talk to every politician you can talk to.
The Likud-aligned lobby in Melbourne was telling me, through the Prime Minister's office, that we couldn't express Are they so powerful? It's all there in the book.
Do they influence? I read the book.
Well, I was told by the Prime Minister.
I was told by Bruce Walpi
at the Prime Minister's office that we were not to express criticisms of settlement policy following representations by AJAC.
Was Ms. Gillard's support for Israel her personal conviction, or was it due to pressure from the Israel lobby?
It could be both.
I mean, are they so powerful, the Israel lobby? That's what I'm asking you.
What I said in the book is that I got a very strong message from the Prime Minister's office that it was not possible even to express concern about the spread of settlements.
Point.
I'm not going to go on repeating the same thing.
No, I'm really not. No, understand
but here we've got the essential difference. I support Israel. I support Israel's right to exist. One disagreement between me and AJAC is my insistence that to be credible, we had to speak out against the remorseless spread of settlements. Now, if that's going to be elevated, I think there's a serious tactical mistake by AJAC here.
Are they so powerful?
Well, again, you've got to read my book. I think we're going over the same position again and again, Nietzsche. I'm happy to talk about other things, but I don't want to just go on repeating myself.
That's fine, but just on the point that you mentioned, Gerard Henderson, the executive director of the Sydney Institute, has written in the Australian newspaper on the 19th of April that it is true that for years you've been the president of the Labour Friends of Israel and were considered a close friend of the Jewish community. He says that in his article that your attitude towards Israel changed in late 2001, and Henderson recalls that after the September 11 attack, you were quite shaken, and you told him that after the attack, you've come to the conclusion that the establishment of the State of Israel in 1948 had been a mistake.
No, I mean, that is entirely wrong. That's entirely wrong.
You also stated to Henderson, he writes it in his article, I mean, you can dispute it, that the Arab world would never accept a creation of a Jewish state. Do you still hold these views, or what do you say about this article?
That's ridiculous. Jordan and Egypt have accepted the establishment of an Israeli state, a Jewish state in the region. So that is not my view. It hasn't been my view. And again, this points to the sort of hysterical reaction to an Australian politician saying our position should be the same as that of the US, which is critical of settlement activity. So here's my challenge. Accept a healthy disagreement that I'm not resiling from. If my long years of support for the State of Israel wants to be overlooked, then that's fine. I think that it is plain bad tactics on the part of AJAC.
Do you believe that the pro-Israel stand taken by Julia Gillard and Labour MPs Mark Dreyfus, Michael Denby, Stephen Conroy, Bill Shorten and others were detrimental to Australia's interests?
Australia's interests are in a two-state solution.
Mr. Carr, Are you surprised that Mr. Danby has hit back at you, accusing you of bigotry over your claims of the influence of the pro-Israeli lobby?
You're asking the same questions over and over again.
No, but Michael Danby, including you into the falafel.
Over and over again. There's no criticism of the falafel faction in my book, and I've said parliamentary colleagues had every right to engage with me about these issues.
In your diary, you've revealed that you challenged the Prime Minister that picked you as a senator and then appointed you foreign minister. Why didn't you follow your leader?
Well, I disagreed with him.
In the launch of your book, former Labour Foreign Minister Gareth Evans said that you ensured that Australia will not be seen internationally as being on the wrong side of history when you forced Ms. Gillard to drop her demand that Australia vote no to the resolution giving Palestine the status of a UN observer. As a result, Australia abstained. In retrospect, did you achieve much?
Australia had to take a stand. You say, did you achieve much? What would we have achieved by voting no? And by the way, it wasn't me forcing the Prime Minister. You had a majority of the Labour cabinet.
You're talking about the Arab vote in Western Sydney as well.
No, I'm talking about a majority. You're alighting into a different issue. Clearly a big majority for it, which is why Julia Gillard changed her position.
Mr. Carr, good luck in the future and thank you very much.
Thank you, Nitsa. Thank you for reading the book. And that's a great honour.
עקבו אחרינו והפיצו אותנו דרך דף הפייסבוק שלנו.